You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. Back in the 1960s, an electrical engineer named Bob Kearns had a eureka moment. Actually, probably in the 50s, I think, is when it happened. What if windshield wipers blinked just like the human eye, pausing for a few seconds between wipes and a little drizzle? He holed up in his Detroit basement for months to come, working on a prototype, and he finally turned his flash of genius into real working intermittent wipers and a patent. Of course, he didn't call them intermittent wipers at that time, but that's a good story that we're going to get into, only to see his idea wind up in Detroit in a car that he had no idea that he accused Detroit of stealing his idea, and he spent the next decade or so fighting the giant automakers for recognition. Well, my next guests were all sucked up into a tale of this stubborn inventor. And the story is called Flash of Genius. It first appeared in The New Yorker, and it hits the big screen today. And joining me now to talk about it are my guests. John Seabrook is a staff writer at The New Yorker, also author of Flash of Genius, Another Two Stories of Invention, a new book out just last month. He's here with us in our studios in New York. Welcome to the show,
Mr. Seabrook. Thanks, Ira.
Thank you. Mark Abraham is a movie producer out of Los Angeles, and he makes his directorial debut with Flash of Genius, and he joins us here in New York. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thank you.
And Greg Kinnear is an Oscar-nominated actor. He plays the inventor Bob Kearns in Flash of Genius. Welcome. To the program. Did you enjoy how did you prepare for this role?
Well, I didn't have the unfortunately, I never met him, and I would have liked to have met the man. His children and his wife Phyllis came by the set. I had a chance to meet all of them, and they were great. They were very helpful, just in terms of talking rather openly about who their father was and what this fight of his against Ford was all about. There was some footage of him in the courtroom. Ed Bradley did a nice piece on him. He went on Letterman when Letterman used to be over at NBC in a funny spot one time. So there are a few bits and pieces to draw from, but you know, as I've said, it's not like doing Nixon. Nobody's ever going to stand up in the theater and say, that's not how I remember the man who invented the intermittent wiper to be. So we had a broad canvas, but we certainly tried to be as authentic as we could.
John, let's talk about how that flash of genius occurred. What was the original story really about? How did that happen? It's really it's a story of a lone inventor. And
my interest in writing the story was, here was this contest between an individual and a corporation, and it was about who invented the intermittent windshield wiper, and it seemed like a good way of getting into the patent system and examining just who the patent system favors and who has the advantage in a patent case. And my take on it was that the patent system was invented in the 18th century when most inventors were individuals. And here we are in the mid to late 20th, when I was writing the story, the late 20th century, when most inventions come from corporations. But when you get into a courtroom and you have an individual versus a corporation, in many ways the individual has the advantage, because a lot of people still want to believe that in that individual flash of genius. And also the story that Kearns told about how he had that idea, which was his wedding night. He was opening a bottle of champagne. The cork goes off and hits him in the eye. And as a result, he starts thinking a lot about why eyes work and don't work. And then he has the idea to make a windshield wiper like an eye. I think in the courtroom, when people heard that story, they said, oh, this is how invention happens, creative things happen from pain and from loss, and from misfortune comes something good. And that, I think, really kind of twigged in people's minds. And so my interest was in those issues. In the film, I think it's much more about sort of Bob's own personal story and what he lost.
Mark Abraham, how did it get to you? How did you discover?
Well, one of the producers, Mike Lieber, and John actually made available to me the article. I hadn't read John's article when it actually came out. I read it a few years later. I read the article. I just loved it. I just thought, what a great story. This guy, and he's a 34-year-old college professor. He's got six children. He's a devout Catholic. He's down in tinkering. He's got a personal handicap. He comes up with this idea and then has it taken from him and decides, rather than just accept it or be paid off and go back and decide I'll come up with a new mashed potato machine or whatever the hell he was going to do, he he decides to fight for his credit and for his dignity. And I just thought, to me, that's the stuff of great American literature. And even though it's a silly concept about an intermittent windshield wiper, it really isn't about that. It's about principle. So I just got caught up in it.
So in your movie pitch, you didn't go in and say, it's about an intermittent windshield wiper.
That's a guaranteed sell right there. What are you talking about? That's a winner. You just in a second, they're buying that up.
Exactly. But the film does show, goes full circle about the family and his mm-hmm. family life, having the close family, losing it, coming back to his family. Yeah. It's really about the family.
It is. It's about fatherhood. It's about being gone. It's about being absent. It's about what you leave. What's the legacy? And, you know, look, he was clearly not a great father. And interesting, a lot of friends of mine have said it made them think about being dads, because not that they all went as far as Bob Kearns mm-hmm. went, but it is about the cost of a battle like this, and certainly this battle took its toll.
Mm-hmm. Greg, this is not a terribly likable character in this film, although you feel sorry for him sometimes. There's the scene with Alan Alda, who's his first lawyer. It's the first, only one really in the who starts to comment what a pain in the butt this guy is to deal with.
Mm-hmm.
How do you resist from turning him into that kind of character that everybody would love?
Yeah, I like that. Alan Alda plays the attorney who tries to explain to Bob, this is how justice works in our country. And he points out that Bob was not the most charming man to walk into the room. And I had some sense of that from certainly from John's, I think time that he spent with him and talking to the kids. I mean, he did seem to be a little abrasive, a little distrustful, and a little abrupt. I mean, I don't think he was a bad guy. I did feel like there was definitely this underlying decency to mm-hmm. him, and that's what hopefully makes people root for him. But what I liked about Mark's addressing this movie is there's a lot of happy ending movies out there, and I don't feel like this movie asks for you to like your guy that you're following in the story. We don't pander to the audience. I feel like we gave you a pretty straightforward guy who's a little, if anything, prickly, and you have to like him warts and all if you want to get on board the journey.
Mm-hmm. Talking with Greg Kinnear, who plays the inventor Bob Kearns in Flash of Genius, also Mark Abraham, movie producer out in Los Angeles, his first directorial debut.
Yeah.
You have fun?
I enjoyed it. I thought it was a great experience, one of the most challenging experiences. It's such an intense day-to-day thing. Every day you have this dream about how you expect it to be and, what the settings are going to be and mm-hmm. how – and every day that crashes at about 80 miles an hour up into reality. You don't have enough money. You don't have enough time. The sun's going away. But I loved it. I love working with the actors. That's a really rewarding aspect.
Also, John Seabrook, author of Flash of Genius and Other True Stories of Invention. And you actually did meet.
Yeah, I spent a lot of time with Bob.
How does he match up to the character in the film?
Well, Greg does a great job with his face of really – Bob had this quality in his face. I call it Midwestern angst. I'm not sure.
Carry it with me everywhere I go.
And maybe it's because Greg comes from the Midwest too, but there's something about the way that Greg uses his face to sort of – he's certain, but behind that certainty, maybe he's not so certain, which is very much Bob Kearns. In real life, Bob Kearns was a good deal more difficult to deal with than you see in the film, at least by the time I encountered him, which was, well along into this whole Patton odyssey of his. Mm-hmm. But he'd become very, very sort of rooted in this thing, and there was very little oxygen around him. He was just consumed, and even in the end when he won, he wasn't really very happy because the court never found for willful infringement, which they do make that distinction in the movie. One of the things the movie does really well is it actually lays out these complicated legal issues in a very clear way that doesn't interrupt the flow of the film at all. At any rate, Bob was dissatisfied with that, and as a matter of fact, he didn't even cash the check. He got $18 million from Chrysler, and he didn't cash a check for 7 years because he was so mad at the judge for taking, I think he took $10 million of that and paid off all of it. He had four different sets of lawyers,
right,
and all of whom eventually quit. And so the judge had to sort of distribute the money. And Bob was so mad about that that he just refused to spend it until his son, one of his sons finally said, come on, Dad, can't we just go to the bank?
Let's go there. Let's get the $18 million. Right. But didn't? Yeah, but Bob also, I mean, it wasn't just his anger. I mean, he genuinely felt that that judge had had ulterior
That's
motives
right.
in that judgment.
That's right. The judge, who was named Avern Cohen, was from a pretty prominent Detroit family who had many connections, whose family had connections in the automobile industry, as practically every prominent family mm-hmm. in Detroit would. But Bob was very suspicious of he was very suspicious of me, actually, yeah. when I first approached him. It took me days to persuade him that I wasn't actually working for, Ford or General Motors.
Well, that was the interesting part, because in the beginning of the movie, it's set up at him teaching a class of ethics. This was paramount in his life. He said, you can be an engineer, but ethics is going to be the motivating force, and that's the whole theme of his search,
yes,
right?
Yeah. Absolutely. And what's important is I wasn't concerned as a filmmaker and didn't want to impart with Greg anything that went beyond the tale of where the story was. Else there's no character arc. And,
yeah.
and when Bob started and you look at the pictures and you see that, he was this happy guy. And he was a guy who thought he was dreaming, the American dream was there. So it was very important for the actor to be able to bring you that warmth, as well as ultimately when he does mm-hmm. have a nervous breakdown. That's what I thought was most important about that. In the end, when it went on and on and on, actually the movie doesn't go that far
yeah.
in it.
Yeah. There's also an interesting scene, we were mentioning Alan Alda as his lawyer, where he tells Bob Kearns, you may want money, but we're going to get you justice.
Yeah.
Justice. And have audiences responded to that when you show it?
It's really interesting because in the last month of us showing the film, as things have started to happen in this country that have put a lot of pressure on people financially and feeling suddenly that they've all been marginalized, and you can just feel it, you see it, it's mm-hmm. clearly it's not profound to say that. What's interesting, while they watch that scene, there's been a palpable sense in the movie theater of when Alan Alda says, Bob says, what about this little thing called justice? And Alan says, this is justice in America. This is how you get what justice is. You don't get a ticker tape parade. The mayor doesn't give you a key to the city. You get a check. And people have now started
talking. Not anymore. You don't even get a check anymore.
People have started talking back to the screen now. It's funny.
Is that right?
People have said, yeah, you tell them. They are feeling that this character is somehow embodying their frustrations. And look, I don't know what that means or doesn't mean. I mean, art isn't – that's not our goal. But it is interesting that it's resonating deeper. It's definitely something's happening.
And this is not a real action movie. You've put a lot of burden on Greg to carry with his facial expressions and his acting and his long scenes of just him alone.
Yes.
And he does very well.
Yeah, I watched him and marveled, because there's things that people don't – a lot of times these days in movies there's a lot of camera movement
right.
to mask actual acting. Well, Greg understands how to do that. There's a scene at the end of the picture in the courtroom, and it's a 2 minutes or more of just the camera being there on Bob Kearns. And that's not – there's no tricks there. That's – either you got a guy who can carry it or a guy who doesn't. And Greg just, it's beautiful. And when we did it, it was like 3 o'clock in the morning in the courtroom, and the entire group of people just spontaneously started applauding. It was really moving.
This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from MTR News. I'm Ira Flato with John Seabrook, Mark Abraham, and Greg Kinnear talking about Flash of Genius, the new film that's coming out today.
Right. Yeah,
that's right.
In a theater near you, I think.
At a theater near you.
How was that courtroom scene to film?
Just turn on your intermittent wipers and get in the car, drive on down the road. How was the courtroom?
The courtroom scene.
Well, the courtroom was interesting because, I was playing a guy who, he's not a trained lawyer. I mean, Bob, he kind of learned his own road to get to that mm-hmm. place. He kind of followed his own got his own education on that. And it's a chewy thing to be able to play an actor in the big courtroom scene. You always look forward to that. And here I am playing, unfortunately, a guy who is not really have the equipment to be there. And so playing kind of his nervousness and kind of his that awkwardness was actually kind of fun in a way. And the courtroom was really beautiful. It was shot – the movie was shot by Dante Spinotti, who is a wonderful Academy Award winning or nominated many times Academy Award nominated cinematographer. And the pictures in there, and I think the whole look of mm-hmm. the film is really extraordinary.
It is. There are great scenes in the movie where other young inventors come around him as their hero, and I'm just wondering, John, does it make the case, and you make the case for these garage inventors as being these heroes?
I'll say two things about that. One is that that is very true to reality. When I was in the courtroom while the trials were going on, there were always inventors out in the halls and in the audience. And at all the breaks, they would gather around Bob, and people would whisper, oh, there goes the man who invented the windshield wiper, you know?
The pocket protector crap.
It was exciting. Exciting. I think every garage inventor in America, and there still are a whole lot of them, is going to go to this film and be delighted that here's a film that's actually made about one of them that shows what they have to deal with. Because if you talk to any inventor you talk to, he will say that there's this kind of not invented here syndrome in American corporations that, you know, if they didn't come up with it in their big research lab with all their engineers, then they're not interested in getting it from somewhere else.
Yeah, I'm reminded of the play on Broadway about the Farnsworth invention. Yeah,
exactly.
Recently.
Right.
That was about that.
But it's interesting, if you go to Google and you hit that little tab on the right that says more and you go down, they have that patents. They got a new patents list on Google, and you can put in any idea in the world there. And it also lists all of the patents year to year that are currently being made and that have been patented, and all of them, you go to the top 10, they're all virtually huge corporations. The idea of an individual creating something seems nostalgic.
Yeah. Are you familiar with the Gordon Gould story of the laser invention?
Yep.
You didn't put that one in your book. I thought that would be...
What is that? Am I asking? Are we wasting time? Do all your listeners know the Gordon Gould?
Give us a minute. I got a minute
go
before
ahead.
The break.
Go ahead. Refresh my memory a little
this
bit.
This is about a guy who took 30 years to win the right to the right to be the inventor of the laser. Two guys had already won Nobel Prizes for it. And he was a graduate student at Columbia, and this professor was down the hall from him, and he came up with this thing virtually overnight. He stood up in bed, wrote some notes on it, went down to the local store, maybe on the Upper West Side, got it notarized. And that's how that was used in the court. It took him 30 years also to finally win the recognition. He won millions and millions and millions of dollars given away to most of his lawyers.
I smell a sequel.
All right, we have to take a break. We'll come right back after this a short break and talk lots more with John Seabrook, Mark Abraham, and Greg Kinnear. Flash of Genius premiering today. We'll be right back after this break. I'm Ira Flatow. This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday from NPR News. You're listening to Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I'm Ira Flato. We're talking this hour about Flash of Genius, the new movie about the man who invented the intermittent windshield wiper, out in theaters today. Also, that's the name of the book written by John Seabrook, Flash of Genius and Other True Stories of Invention. John Seabrook is here. Also along with us is Mark Abraham, who is a movie producer and first-time director. Greg Kinnear, Oscar-nominated actor. He plays inventor Bob Kearns in Flash of Genius. Greg, can this kind of stuff get in your system and do more sort of roles like this?
Well, I've done a few real-life people, before, and this kind of character, it's always fun. I mean, it's still the same job, to try and find somebody, and the bottom line is, in its most simple form, is to try and make the audience believe you.
Yeah.
And we were lucky with Bob because he was such a specific guy. I felt like, but at the end of the day, I don't know. There's so many real life stories. I don't know if audiences really care one way or the other. I think they're looking for a good emotional story, and the fact that it's a true story or not, even though we seem to have passed through that tunnel already, and now we're on to, well, what do you got to tell me? What's the journey? And I think this has got a good journey.
Yeah. John, are there the other inventors in your book, are they more like this kind of storyline or –
They're all obsessives. I mean, I think you kind of have to be, because
be
you work alone
nutty.
And without a whole lot of prospect of success. I mean, you have to be really devoted to what you're doing. So one of them is a guy who figured out there was this machine called the Antikythera mechanism, this ancient Greek computer found at the bottom of the ocean 100 years ago, which was made 2,000 years ago. And for many, many years after it was found, no one could understand what it was. And this guy was able to sort of methodically figure out exactly what all the gears did. Wow. It was a calculating machine for stars.
And you come from a famous inventing family, Seabrook.
Well, yeah, my family were one of the first people to get in the frozen food business. And my uncle Courtney, this is actually why I got so interested, I think, in inventors, is when I was a little kid, every time we would have frozen food, my dad would say, "Your Uncle Courtney invented that boil in the pouch bag." Every time we'd stick it down in the boiling pan of water.
I didn't know that.
It's fame right here.
Wow.
And something about the quotidian nature of it was actually one of the things that attracted me to the windshield wipers. I mean, there are these little everyday things all around us that we don't really think about, and yet, you know, there's a story behind them, and somebody's flash of genius is, you know, responsible for that thing. So that was my little flash of genius.
Yeah, I mean, it might be. I agree. I mean, it seems nostalgic, I guess, the idea that every little knob and switch and widget, you know, these days came from just one person. But the truth is, whether you're working under the umbrella of a corporation or not, it starts with the idea of one guy.
1-800-989-8255. Let me see if I can get a quick phone call or two from Steve in Oregon, Ohio.
Hello, Ira.
Hi there.
Hi, how are you today?
How are you? Go ahead.
Great show. I'm great, thanks. Listen, I'm the inventor of the laser level, the patent 5836081. And my story actually is similar to begin with, but we prevailed. I didn't have the funds to even get the patent, so I talked the patent attorney into paying for the patent and doing the whole process. And we did receive the patent, and I contacted some large companies, and nobody was interested. Nobody's beating our doors down for laser levels at this time. Kind of funny.
We never know who's going to phone into our program. So.
I listen to you guys all the time. I'm on my way bass fishing in the marshes right now. So.
Well, have a good weekend, Steve.
A great day.
Thanks for calling.
I
got to go. We're running out of time. Let me ask you one more question, John. And I forgot what that question
was.
Are there stories in the film that were not in your essay or in the book that you learned later that were included in the film, parts of the story?
There are some things that I didn't have a chance to put into my book or my piece that I talked with a screenwriter about, and that actually then made it into the film. It was kind of like a second chance for some of these things that I knew about Bob. And then there's some stuff in the film that the screenwriter kind of invented that you know, wasn't in the piece. But a lot of the film is remarkably close to the piece, which is why I love the film. One reason why I love the film is it really is true in many ways.
Mm-hmm. And Mark, was it tough? Was there a lot of stuff that wound up on the floor here?
Not really. Yeah? I tell you, I John's a fantastic writer. He's such an even hand, but he kind of sucks you in. And when you read the piece, that's how I felt. And it was such a great template for a screenplay. Honestly, we followed it very, very closely. The only thing we did is we condensed time, which you always do in a film. You condense time and space because it's not three-dimensional. But
right.
Not a lot in on the floor.
Did you have a model of a movie in your mind that you wanted it to look like?
Yeah. Yeah. I did. I was very much a fan of the movies of the 70s, where, for instance, one of the key films that I was inspired by was All the President's Men, where Bob Redford wears the same, corduroy jacket with the patch pockets through the whole film, because that's what people do. Bob wears the same outfit. And it also has a certain veracity, the way the lights hit things, the shadows. You feel like you're inside that movie. You feel like Ben Bradley being played by Jason Robards. And that was kind of what Dante and I chose to go for. And Greg has this naturalistic way of acting where he's, you don't even know it. I mean, you get caught up in watching him, and you do get lost. I mean, when the family came, they would literally. He was like he was in the museum. They came and they would look at him and stare like, "Is this?" They weren't sure if it was their dad or if it was Greg.
Because it was a big family, and
six,
and
mom,
and they formed a company that did nothing but defend his reputation.
Yeah, I mean,
that was their business.
Essentially, it became their business for quite a while. I mean, eventually they went on to do other things. But it's interesting, that legacy that Bob left them about justice and about principle, even though a lot of other pain this family went through and a lot of dysfunction, to this day, they all have a certain reverential feeling about their dad because he gave them something, and what he gave them was a code.
Well, that's a good place to end it. Gentlemen, I want to thank you all for taking time to be with us, and good luck with the film. It's a great film. I really enjoyed it.
Thank you. We appreciate that very much.
Greg Kinnear, Oscar-nominated actor. He plays Bob Kearns in Flash of Genius. Mark Abraham is the movie's producer. First time he's a movie producer, but this is his first time directing a film, Flash of Genius. And John Seabrook, a staff writer at The New Yorker, also author of Flash of Genius and Other True Stories of Invention, a book out last month. Thank you. Have a good weekend.